Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here together with Kay Puttock. Hello, Kay, and hello, listener.
Hello, Ursula, and hello, listeners. I don't need to ask you about the weather today, Ursula. I guess the rivers have crested in our area on Monday. And as you know, Ursula, there was a fatality last month when an Ames resident drowned in the Skunk River. We wish to express our condolences to his friends and family.
It is an important time to talk about the subject of safety in high waters. We actually are going to discuss this in the second half of our show today.
But right now we have guests here in the studio. Welcome Susan Guiasta and Steve Wilson. Susan is the Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Steve is Energy Services Coordinator for Ames.
My father, Klaus, recently came home with two rain barrels, which he bought at Ace Hardware. We installed them together last weekend, and of course, they're already completely full of water. But anyway, he explained to me that the City of Ames helped pay for the rain barrels, and we got curious here at Local Talk about this and the other incentive programs for energy efficiency. So the comprehensive program of the City of Ames to reduce our carbon footprint is called EcoSmart. Is that correct?
That's right. The City of Ames has the EcoSmart program, which is pretty comprehensive. It is a series of programs aimed at encouraging conservation and decreasing energy usage across the community. And one of those programs is the rain barrel rebate program.
Now, as I recall correctly, the city paid for half.
The city offers a cost-share program for the rain barrels, and we will rebate per utility customer $50.
Per barrel. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of a set of different categories of incentives.
There's a whole series of programs under the EcoSmart umbrella, and their education and rebate programs, and they include Smart Energy, Smart Water, Smart Watershed, Smart Trash, Smart Ride, and Smart City. We have a couple of smaller ones under there that we don't promote as much. Smart Jobs, which is our paperless application system. Smart Housing, which is a rehab and renovation program using energy-efficient materials. But the other ones are probably the more prominent, more well-known rebate and education programs that we have. One of our more popular programs, and the one that actually was asked about, is the Smart Energy Program and the rebates that come with that. Most people live in Ames or Ames Utility customers. This is a municipally owned and run utility. That means we all pay and we all are sort of owners into the utility. And Steve has some great information and statistics about usage of those Smart Energy programs throughout the year.
Yeah, Smart Energy actually started for Ames in 2007. Initially, what happened was we had a feasibility study done to determine whether or not those types of programs would work in Ames. And the reason we did that was because we wanted to make sure that the money that we spent on the programs, because rebates and audits and whatnot cost money, that would make sense in terms of the economics. We know how much it costs us, for instance, to build a new generator. And as long as the program cost is less than that, we accomplish essentially the same thing. You can either build a new generator and account for or serve a greater load, or you can push down the need for energy through programs like Smart Energy. The end result is the same.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to replace a generator, it can be much smaller if you've been successful in saving energy. And so the council said, yeah, go for it. And we developed initially, I think, four programs. We're up to 12 programs now. And we have programs that have been ongoing, like Primetime Power, which is an air conditioner load control program that's been actually going since 1994. Cycles off air conditioners on hot days, 7.5 minutes out of every half an hour. We also have a tree planting program that sort of predates the beginning of Smart Energy. We've had that for a number of years. But where we go now with Smart Energy is we have essentially four areas. We have an educational component. I'm on a speakers bureau. We go out and make presentations on conserving energy and energy conservation to local service groups, schools, basically any organization that wants to hear about conservation. We also have the load control program. I mentioned Primetime Power, and that one is initiated from the utility side of the meter. when it gets hot, we send out a signal to reduce the demand in Ames. We can take about 3 megawatts of electricity off the system, and by doing that, we save millions of dollars, which leads into a lower rate for us, and again, that smaller need for future generation. And then we have an audit program, and the audit program is free for City of Ames electric
customers. Audit program being that your house can be audited for energy?
Right. It's an energy audit. It's a little different for commercial businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Commercial businesses, because there's so many different types of things that they can be doing to use energy, the audit is sort of an all-encompassing whatever you need for us to look at. We will do that. In the home, it's a little more straightforward.
So somebody comes to your home or business and kind of figures out
right.
what's going on? And
yeah, we contract with an energy engineering firm that comes out, makes an appointment, spends maybe an hour and a half in the home, and they look at the typical home systems like insulation, windows, doors, heating and air conditioning equipment, appliances, that kind of thing. And then they will also do a blower door test for older homes that were built before 2000. And that then is able to tell them about air infiltration, which can also waste energy. So the audit then, the auditor will compile his information. He takes that back to his office. He puts together a report. He comes back and he gives the report to the customer, and the customer then is provided with a list of here's where you could use some help. Here's our recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
And when they – it's a good way to develop a baseline. So I encourage anybody to do an audit, and that might be the first step. After that, maybe they need a new refrigerator. We have rebates on Energy Star-rated refrigerators, freezers, dishwashers, and washing machines. We also then have a rebate on lighting, trying to move people away from incandescent lighting and on to compact fluorescence or LED lighting.
So these rebates, are these usually follow the pattern of the rain barrel, or the barrel that you have a set amount of money that you'll give a rebate on?
Yes. For instance, in lighting, if you look at one of our lighting claim forms, or if you explore the program, which, by the way, you can go to cityofames.org and click on the smart energy button. You make your way out to program information, you'll find out that there are certain lighting systems that are pretty common that we rebate, and there's a set rebate on them. You know, mm-hmm. things like fluorescent lighting, T8 lamps, electronic ballast, things like that. Compact fluorescence, the rebate is $2, or the price of the bulb, whichever is less. You know, the prices are coming down. LED we handle a little differently. Because there's so many different types of LED, and that particular technology is changing almost daily,
mm-hmm.
We've decided to just rebate 30% of the cost of the LED. That actually makes sense in terms of a homeowner that might spend $20, the rebate is 30%. On a business that might spend $200, if we set an amount like $10 or $20, they'd be disappointed.
Right.
So 30% makes sense mm-hmm. in terms of helping the customer make the decision. And that's what rebates are all about, enticing or enabling, if you will, the customer to go to that next level of efficiency. So, mm-hmm. And the rebates are working very well. A year ago, it's interesting, 80% of our rebates on just screw-in bulbs to replace incandescents were compact fluorescents in a very small amount with LEDs, and that's totally changed now.
So are people responding to these incentives?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When we talked about energy audits, we'd really do a push, and I think it's somewhat seasonal, that during the change of seasons into hot weather, into very cool weather, there seems to be a lot more interest in keeping those utility bills down. The home energy audits, we look at those as sort of the gateway. We get mm-hmm. somebody interested in conserving energy. Perhaps they're driven by the idea of a lower utility bill. It really doesn't matter why they call. They get that scheduled. And we see them then maybe moving to the next level of, as Steve said, you know, maybe if I bought or invested in a more efficient refrigerator, I might see that payoff. Maybe I can't replace all my windows, but maybe if I replaced a couple, I would see a difference in my heating or cooling bills. And so once we can get them into sort of in the door mm-hmm. with that home energy audit, it really helps us encourage them to pursue some of the other rebate programs we have.
Starts the conversation.
Absolutely.
What other kind of rebates do you offer?
Appliances, lighting, efficient air conditioning. We'll rebate that. For commercial businesses, like I said, it's a little different because there's so many different types of electric systems. So we essentially approach a commercial customer with our custom program. And the custom program essentially says, if you can reduce your demand for electricity, we will rebate that effort. As long as it's a permanent change, they might have some electrotechnology for drying product, and they've taken that out and they put in a new one that uses significantly less energy, then we rebate that.
What do you mean you rebate that? You take a percentage of their savings or?
Well, it talked earlier about the fact that the program costs have to be less than the cost of building a new future generator.
Mm-hmm.
So we determined what that level was, balancing that against the incentive to have the commercial business go to that next level of efficiency. And so, I mean, the rebates have to be meaningful to the customer, but yet they can't be too meaningful because then it drives our costs beyond mm-hmm. where we can tolerate them. We've set that at $500 for every kW, for every kilowatt of electricity that the commercial customer reduces their load by. It's worth $500 to them. And so in the commercial world, making a change can have significant impact on our town, on the electric demand. So we paid out some pretty significant rebates through Smart mm-hmm. Energy. But, so essentially what we tell folks is that, you know, we want them to explore anything that will reduce the demand for electricity.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the goal is to reduce future costs. And a lot of people think, well, of course the customer gets the benefit immediately of putting in something efficient because their bills are lower. But the overall goal for the program and what the council understood and gave approval for the programs initially was for the reduction of that future cost. Utilities, because Ames is a growing community, if you look at the historical records, we grow at about 4% in terms of additional electric need, if you will, a year. And so if we did nothing else in Ames, we would eventually outgrow our ability to generate enough electricity. We've relieved a lot of that stress by completing a tie line between our utility and Mid-American Energy. We also have a tie line over to Alliant Energy in Boone. And so that helps us. But when you look at the mix of generation, is it our generator? Is it a backup peaking generator? Is it wind energy? Is it something that we have to bring off of our tie line, buy it off the grid? All of those prices are different, and they contribute to our rate payers, the rate that we pay. And so we have an individual in our office named Colin Detman, has all of these big computer terminals in front of him, and he monitors all of that pricing. And so if, for instance, he can buy power off the grid cheaper than we can generate it for ourselves, he might back down the generators and start buying power.
So the places that the city gets energy from varies all the time. He's constantly shifting where the energy is coming from.
Right, exactly.
It's very interesting. So it's not just a set thing.
No. And that's an important consideration for the utility because, again, our goal – investor-owned utilities, they're able to charge a margin. You know, they make money off of the sale of the commodity of electricity.
Right.
Municipally-owned utilities don't.
Right.
We're only able to charge what our system and costs are. So, and our goal is not to make mm-hmm. money on the utility. Our goal is to save our customers as much money as we possibly can, make it economical. We want to be reliable. We want to be economically driven. So programs like Smart Energy help us to, they help us save energy through rebates and audits, but the actual process of determining which is the cheapest cost supply also helps us drive down mm-hmm. those costs.
So it's a very interactive approach to our providing energy to the community.
Right.
Is it relatively unique for the municipal energy for the municipality to own the energy?
It is, and that's one of the huge benefits of Ames in terms of their electric system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Local ownership is extremely important, and because, just like it says, it's local ownership. We can basically do what we want to do or what we need to do with that generation.
That's right. I remember growing up in Ames, always hearing people say, we are so lucky in Ames that we have a city-owned municipal energy source. And I never really understood what that meant. And then I lived in New York City for 30 years where we had Con Edison, and I really learned what that meant.
Yeah.
So not only are we local, I think we're only one of a handful across the state.
Uh-huh.
When you have a transmission issue, if you have a power line down, we are able to respond. We live here.
Right.
We understand when there's an outage. We understand how important that is to somebody's quality of life. And we're there. So
that's right. And you're accountable to the citizenship because you work for them,
absolutely.
Not for your own profit.
What makes Ames even more unique, in addition to being a municipally owned and held utility, is that we have the resource recovery plant that provides fuel for
right. mm-hmm.
the electric mm-hmm. plant. That is extremely unusual. We were the first waste-to-energy facility in the nation in 1975. That's been a very successful partnership between the reuse of garbage as an alternate fuel source for the power plant.
That's right. That's right. Well, going back to these incentive programs, what I have retained so far from this conversation, aside from the rain barrels, mm-hmm. is that you can get a rebate on light bulbs, and you can get a rebate on refrigerators and other large appliances.
Air conditioners,
dishwashers, and washing machines.
Yeah.
And if you reduce your energy to a certain amount, you get a rebate?
As a commercial customer.
The homeowner, the rebates on, say, an efficient air conditioner are established. Now, there's an entry level efficiency. We base this on the seasonal energy efficiency rating,
mm-hmm.
and that's a number applied to new air conditioners that is representative of their efficiency level. And the higher that number, the more efficient they are and the lower cost for operating. And so our entry level, if you will, is 14 SEER. And for that, the customer gets a $200 rebate, but then the rebate goes up $10 for every tenth of a SEER point. And so the more efficient the air conditioner, the higher the rebate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what Steve's saying is that it's not just for any dishwasher or air conditioner. The purpose of the rebate is to push you to that energy efficient level.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that we're able to push you into a more energy efficient appliance or air conditioner, which does increase your cost in most cases, that rebate is the push to get you there.
The mm-hmm. initial cost of the appliance, you mean, not the
right.
overall.
That, and for things like refrigerators, dishwashers, washing machines, and some of the lighting, the rebates are set. They're established. You know, you buy a 20 cubic foot refrigerator, the rebate's $100. So some of the rebates you know what they are. You can tell, you get a claim form, so here's what my rebate's going to be. Others, like the 30%, you know, you have to work a calculation or something. But
mm-hmm.
And
so in case you just tuned in, we're speaking with Susan Vyazda from the City of Ames and Steve Wilson. Susan is the public relations officer for the City of Ames, and Steve is the energy services coordinator for the city. And we're talking about how the City of Ames has a program that is extremely dynamic, both in how it gives incentives to residents and also how itself is monitoring the best use of energy, the best sources of energy, and is in a way trying to push the residents to take the same approach, of a very dynamic approach to saving energy. The EcoSmart program also has different programs. There's the Smart Water, Smart Trash, Smart Ride, and Smart Watershed. Could you speak a little bit about that? What program was the Rain Barrel part of?
So the Rain Barrel is a joint project of Smart Water and Smart Watershed. Obviously, stormwater runoff is an important component of conservation. We don't want contaminants and pollutants within our watershed getting into the streams and rivers. One thing that we can do to both conserve water and sort of retain it and prevent runoff and erosion is through investing in rain barrels. And Ursula, you mentioned that you have invested in rain barrels, and we do appreciate that. Rain barrels, not so much this summer, but in previous summers, have been a really great source of garden water, landscaping water, very easy to install.
Yes, it is.
It's basically just a containment coming off your gutter system on your house, and then you have stored that water for use later on. It reduces the need to draw into the city water supply for your basic gardening, for your lawn watering.
But I have a suggestion that you take it a step farther and have some sort of irrigation system, because this is the trouble. When it rains, it pours, right? Mm-hmm. So now it's rained a whole lot. The barrel's full. Mm-hmm. And I don't have an efficient way to get rid of that water while it's raining.
Right.
So I'm saying the next step you can take is some sort of home irrigation system where you can, you know, dispense with the water as it develops. So just a suggestion.
We're open to all sorts of new ideas. It is difficult when your rain barrel's full and what to do with that water. But Smart Water, Smart Watersheds, these are also, they have the education component. We have tried to reflect the water rates in a way that would make it conducive to conserving. There is different, basically they call it inclining block rates, that as you use more water, you pay for more water. And strangely enough, it wasn't always that way. Electric rates have been structured in a similar way to encourage conservation. In addition to the rain barrels, a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that we have a small number of what's called turf management rebates or rain garden rebates that are specific. Often you're asked to attend a small workshop or class to learn about, is there a place in your yard that might be appropriate for a rain garden?
Explain what a rain garden is.
So a rain garden, somewhat like a rain barrel, is a way to retain water. And a rain garden is even more special because you plant specific native grasses and even flowering plants that have the ability to absorb a lot of water. They filter it through the root system. And any contaminants that might be in that water are absorbed into the plant system rather than being dispersed back into the waterways.
So is it like a small marsh?
It is. It really shouldn't be wet all the time, but it has the ability, like a sponge, to absorb that water. And it's basically a rain garden is in a depression, so you sort of dig out a little bit of like a little dimple in your yard. And there might be somewhere that naturally collects water that pools or ponds naturally. That would, might be a good location then to do some native plantings to help absorb that water. And then we do have periodically some workshops on that. It's a little more labor intensive. Somebody sort of has to make that commitment, but we can help you see that project to fruition. And those are available as a joint project, again, between watersheds and water.
Okay.
You mentioned some of our other programs. The Smart Trash Program, again, talks about that great partnership between our resource recovery system and the Ames Electric Power Plant, where we are taking the trash that comes into Story County, processing it into refuse-derived fuel, or RDF, and then we're using that fuel source in the power plant in place of coal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very unique system, and a lot of people in Ames, when they first come here, are really sort of confused about our recycling program. They're used to maybe a bin program,
right,
with glass, metals, plastics. It's so simple in Ames. It's called single stream recycling. That product, that garbage is taken to the resource recovery system, and it is separated out. We take those metals out of the system. We recycle those.
But the resident doesn't separate them out.
No, the resident. Mm-hmm. The one thing that we ask residents to recycle, and we've had a lot of success with this, is glass. Mm-hmm. So if you see a yellow dumpster at your grocery store that you usually go to, that's the glass recycling bin. Mm-hmm. Obviously, glass does not burn. It creates some mechanical problems with our equipment. So we ask that you take any of those pickle jars, jelly jars, baby food jars, drop those in the glass recycling bins, keep them out of the waste stream. And that product, the glass product, is ground up and reused as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. If somebody is interested in your rebate program or, in general, your education program, what do they do?
Yeah, we direct people to our website, cityofames.org/go green is the sort of comprehensive button that's on our front page. But if you're specifically interested in the electric programs, you can go to cityofames.org/smart energy. That also is a quick link button off the front page of our web.
Okay, so this is KHOI recommending that you work with the City of Ames. Sounds like we have a really dynamic government in terms of dealing with energy on a lot of levels and water. So we really encourage you to contact. Again, it's cityofames.org /go green.
Go green. There's a button right off the front page or /smart energy.
Okay. Thank you so much. And please come again. Really appreciate hearing about
these
things.
Great to be
here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Like a samba, rapidly strumming my heart strings for you. It can be free, not like bolero, just to have you in my arms, all I want to do. How can I be your string man, strumming my guitar whenever you're blue? Behind my eyes a waterfall's pouring. You never really knew I love you. Waterfall, 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 waterfall. My heart, it's true, flows like a samba, wandering down this cold stream so blue. When you're with me, it's so soothing. Why do your sad eyes tell me we're through? How can I be your string man, strumming my guitar whenever you're blue? Behind my eyes a waterfall's pouring. You never really knew I loved you. Waterfall, 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 waterfall. Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Patuk, here hosting the show today with Ursula Rudenberg. The music we just heard was Waterfall by Ray Burkhart.
During the music break, some new guests arrived here in the studio. Welcome, Ron.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome, Piper.
Hello.
Welcome, Jill.
Good morning.
As we were saying at the beginning of today's show, water safety is an issue of particular importance right now, with the rivers just having crested a few days ago and flash flooding. So, Ron, the dangers of high water touched your family personally a few days ago.
Oh, yes, it did, Ursula.
Ron Ladson is a resident of Cambridge, Iowa, and the father of three teenage girls. He's also a KHOI board member and the host of Soulful Express. But, Ron, tell us what happened.
Well, Saturday, my daughter was out playing with friends, and I went to go look for her, and I've heard the emergency, like, sirens going off, and I really hadn't paid any attention to it. So I was on my way to an event, and I'm like, well, let me go check on my daughter. And I went by the library, and it wasn't there, and I went by a friend's house, and it wasn't there. And I saw the fire, you know, rescue equipment down by the creek in Cambridge. And I go down there and come to find out that my daughter and her friends were almost swept away by playing in the creek.
Now, you had told your daughter not to go to the river, right?
Yes, I did, because of the, you know, with the heavy rain that was coming and the dangers. There's a back part of it that you really can't see anybody back there. And I told her I didn't want her and her friends going back there because it's very dangerous.
And this is the South Skunk River?
Yes, it is.
So what were they doing? So why were they back there?
Apparently, they were back there playing, and one of their friend's shoes got dirty, and they decided to get in the water to wash the shoes off. And they didn't realize that the current was that strong. So one of her friends went into the water to wash her shoes off and got swept away by the water. And went down, I'd say, maybe about 100 feet before she landed on a spot that wasn't that deep and she was able to stand up. But it was a very dangerous situation for all the kids involved.
So for a certain part, she was in water that was so deep she couldn't touch the bottom.
That she couldn't touch the bottom, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So fortunately, she was not lost, though.
Exactly. And then my daughters and everybody went in and got her out, that part that, you know, she could actually stand up. But it was a very frightening situation for all the girls that were involved in that situation.
And for you.
As a parent, yes. I tell every parent, keep an eye on your kids. And with the way that the water is, rising now, and just the dangers of kids playing in creeks, you know, water safety is very, very important to me. And it definitely hit home Saturday. You know, I almost lost my daughter in a creek accident.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Piper, you're here from the Skunk River Paddlers, and you're also an active whitewater paddler. You're also with the American Canoe Association, a certified canoe instructor and whitewater kayak instructor, and the Iowa Games Whitewater Events Commissioner. So, Piper, you've had a little bit of experience with fast-moving water, and I understand you recently also participated in a swift water rescue workshop put on by the Department of Natural Resources.
Yes.
So talk a little bit about what are the basic principles here of safety. What are the first things that a parent or anybody really down by the river should remember?
So I've been active in whitewater paddling and events since 1983, so I've had a lot of experience with moving water. And unfortunately, the people who are least experienced with moving water have the fewest skills to recognize the dangers and the fewest skills to deal with the dangers. So that's where all the trouble tends to happen. If there's some reason that you are actually intentionally boating, kayaking, canoeing, motor boat, stand up paddleboard, one of the key safety things is you should be wearing a life jacket, a PFD, a well-known safety piece. But a lot of these accidents are people who aren't out there boating. They're wading about in the water, or there's the inadvertent car float away where someone doesn't realize how buoyant cars are in not very much water. But the kids playing, I played in, you know, runoff water as a kid, too. Who didn't?
Right.
And so water weighs a little more than 8 pounds per gallon. So you think about a milk jug, right? And 8 pounds. So you've got, particularly the smaller the person, if their legs up to about their knees are in the water, like me, I've, you know, got maybe a milk jug of leg in the water for each leg. And there's that much buoyant force up. So all of a sudden I weigh 16 pounds less. I'm on an uneven footing. And the water has this relentless force known as current. It's very easy to get moved by the water. And it doesn't move you to shore. It moves you away from shore. Water up out of the banks, you're now in vegetation, uneven surfaces. So, you know, your chance to just walk back out is low. And your chance to get snappled in things like the vegetation with this relentless push is high.
So what is a kind of a basic rule of thumb other than wear a life vest?
So in terms of if you see water up out of the banks of its creek or river, so it's up in the vegetation, it's not a great idea to go messing about in it. And your ability to read what's going on in that water, when people look at the surface,
It looks smooth.
And maybe you see, okay, maybe you can see some of the current differentials that this part is flowing, this other part appears not to be flowing. Just because the surface appears not to be flowing, you may have some obstructions up near the surface, like the branches of a tree. They're creating kind of a surface eddy. But below that, there may well still be flow, and people are not really aware of that aspect. Or if you're where there's not usually water, there might be a storm drain that you're walking around near, which means there's water zipping down into that storm drain. It would be happy to take you along. The water doesn't really care. It's a moving force. And with that force, the faster that water's flowing, its velocity squared is relationship to force. So it doesn't take much of a speed increase to be a dramatic force increase. And if it's deeper than knees, even an adult probably shouldn't be wading about. And that's kind of for adults, kind of rule of thumb, deeper than your knees, you have the potential for a really serious problem in flowing water.
Mm-hmm. So 1 minute you're having fun.
And the next minute it's not so much.
Yeah, right. Your knees, it doesn't seem very... That doesn't seem very deep at all, but
it
like
doesn't.
You say, with the uneven footing and everything.
Uneven footing that's often slippery, footing that's often shifting, right, if it's got some sort of sand bed, and you just decreased your weight by, if each of your below knees as an adult is somewhere around a gallon of size, you decreased your push-down weight by a little over 16 pounds, and you're on poor footing with relentless force. Well, that's a pretty easy recipe for a problem.
Yeah.
What about canoeing and kayaking? Do you recommend not doing that when the water is this high?
In general, yes. If you see the water up out of the banks, going through the vegetation, then you know you have some potential big problems with – it's not in just the riverbed. So your opportunity to be swept into strainers, things that water will go through and bodies will not. And you think about the spaghetti strainer, right? You pour the water through, the noodles are retained. It's the same thing with vegetation. A canoe, a kayak, the person can be held, the water will flush through, and it will pull that body, that paddle craft, down in, and there's no reason to believe that your head will end up on the surface if that happens. And it will just keep pushing. It's relentless. The water doesn't just, you know, oh, let's take a little break now.
Mm-hmm.
So the speed increases with the increased water in the riverbeds. So your time available to make maneuvering choices is decreased. And the amount of push, we said it increases the velocity squared. So the amount of force preventing you from getting to where you want to be is pretty dramatic. And people just don't recognize that, you know, I'd like to be over there. And then they start paddling towards over there, and it's just not happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then it's a little bit too late.
Mm-hmm. If you do get swept away by water, is there something that you could recommend that somebody do in that situation?
So self-rescue, right? You're thinking about it, getting out of the water. So you're looking at trying to get to shore. You'd like to not get snabbled up in any trees that are down and out across the river because your likeliness of being pulled into and under them is high. But getting a hold of a tree that's still upright could be helpful. And yeah, your primary objective is to try to get to shore, get a grip on things and not be pulled under things. Occasionally, so in whitewater, in swift water rescue things, if you're being inexorably push towards a big strain or, you know, tree out in the water, you'd really like to try and turn towards it, accelerate, and climb up on it. Mm-hmm. We actually worked on that in the Swiftwater Rescue class, and it's pretty darn challenging. And that was with a nice, difficult, smooth PVC pipe with no branches.
Mm-hmm. But the goal is to go on top of it, not underneath.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's another big danger. If the water's over the banks, there's all this debris in there.
Yes, right. And you're floating with debris. And I've had a few log encounters while out paddling in whitewater, and it's not a great thing. You know, for one, it throws your stroke off. Obviously, if your paddle hits your boat. But those things are also moving with a fair bit of force. So not only is it, whoa, what was that? It throws your boat off course. It can actually be painful, too injurious. And on all those things that are flowing with the water, if you do manage to grab onto something, they're going to run into you, too.
Right.
And what you just mentioned, someone being swept under a tree, that happened recently on the Skunk River.
Right. Yes.
A man that was tubing.
And your life jacket, so life jackets are a big safety item. You should be wearing it. You know, carrying it along with you is not incredibly useful. But life jackets won't save your life in a strainer.
Right.
You won't be any worse off. But just because you have a life jacket doesn't mean that you are not going to be pulled underneath or snabbled up. You know, we humans, we have limbs. We're typically wearing stuff, at least clothing, you know, all things that can get attached in vegetation. So water flowing through vegetation is a key sign that, oh, you know, this is above its regular levels, high risk for bad things to happen.
All right. Jill Bird is also here from the Ames Aquatic Center. Jill, can you tell us about the water safety programs for the city?
Yes, we teach a lot of swim lessons during year-round, heavily focused in the summer at the swimming pools. We start with age 6 months and go all the way up through adults. So we have the kind of captive audience in swimming pools, which is still water, but we also, over the past years, have had increased awareness on water safety in moving water as well, because we have those kids there. It's a great avenue to start telling about when you are around lakes and rivers, because we know they don't just come swimming at the pool. So we really try and teach a respect for the water and safety tips. Your life jacket's only good if you're wearing it. It doesn't do you any good to have it on the boat in an emergency situation. You really need to be wearing it. In addition to that, we practice safety rescues. We have them obviously practicing their swim strokes so that they're stronger swimmers and able to help themselves in the water a little
bit
more.
You have a lifeguard program, too?
We do. We also teach a lot of lifeguarding classes throughout the year.
And can anybody take a lifeguarding class?
To take the lifeguarding class, you have to be at least 15 years old. We just got done teaching a couple junior lifeguarding classes for the 11 to 14-year-olds to kind of get a glimpse of what they can do in a few years. And the lifeguarding really focuses on prevention and then response in emergency situations. The Red Cross has done a study that only 97% of people are unable to recognize a swimmer in distress.
Say that again, 97?
97% of people are unable to recognize a distressed swimmer. So that's really kind of shocking when you hear that, but it can happen. Most drownings in under a minute, so it's a really quick time.
Right,
so,
and I can testify to that because I almost drowned once, and that's absolutely true. Nobody noticed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
mm-hmm.
I was with a class with a teacher, and the teacher didn't notice.
Right, we see in the movies, you know, everybody's waving their arms, bobbing up and down, saying "help, help, help," which is not the way that it happens. It's just, you know, right at the surface and then slip under very, very quickly. So
that's right.
Lifeguards are trained to be aware of that, scan the water, watching every person, you know, touching across the water, scanning very quickly to recognize those signals of distress.
So is it possible to still take classes this summer?
Yes. The end of July, we have another class coming up for lifeguarding. We are also doing a non-traditional lifeguard class for adults who maybe have water experience, maybe have been past lifeguards, so that they can kind of get back into the water safety. And so we're excited to continue to offer those throughout the year.
That's great. So if somebody is interested in taking classes or having their children take classes, what do they do?
They can visit the community center attached to City Hall, or they can call the community center, or our brochure comes out twice a year. And you can also register online for any of our programs.
Online where?
Online, I'm sorry, at the City of Ames Park and Recreation website.
So that's cityofames.org. And there's a park and recreation link.
Yes.
And the Aquatic Center is on 13th Street?
Yes.
Next to the Squaw Creek, which right now is very big.
Yes.
Looking very big. Any last words?
So one of the Swiftwater Rescue things I forgot to mention earlier is many times there's a single person at the start and then more than one person in trouble or potentially dead afterwards. So one of the additional swift water rescue or moving water pieces in whitewater circles, the saying is, I'm number one, it sucks to be you. Because the only thing worse than one person in trouble is two. So anytime there is an event where someone's in trouble, the people helping have to make sure their safety
right.
first. You know, things like a rope to the person is much better than trying to get to the person, because then you just have two people in trouble.
Absolutely. We teach kids reach or throw, don't go.
Right.
Same concept.
And a drowning person is often a very dangerous person.
Yes. They're frightened. They're not thinking logically. Whatever comes close to them, they're going to grab onto.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, thank you so much for coming in and the sobering interview, for sure. Seems like the main thing is just be respectful of water once it crests, and if it's flowing through vegetation, just let it do what it needs to do. And
water is intrinsically not safe. We don't breathe well underwater.
Right.
So, I mean, and it's
have
relentless.
Respect for that. Yeah. Yeah. Just a quick description. Can you talk about who the Skunk River Paddlers are?
The Skunk River Paddlers are an informal group of paddlers that meets Ada Hayden on Wednesday evenings throughout the summer. And some of us have more formal groups. I happen to be the primary instructor for the Iowa State University Canoe Kayak Club that has training towards whitewater stuff throughout the regular school year, fall and spring semesters. The Skunk River Paddlers don't have a dues structure. They're just people in this vicinity who like paddling the area waters and choose to get together on Wednesdays to have, if you show up at Ada Hayden, you know somebody else is going to be there paddling with you.
Great. Thank you so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. Vivica, you're here with your sports report. This is Vivica Diller, our KHOI News sports reporter. We're so happy to have you.
Well, good morning, and just welcome to another sports edition with Vivica. First up, let's start with the tough loss yesterday from the USA men's soccer. The 2-1 loss to Belgium ended what looked to be a great run for the World Cup for Team USA. On the other side, Belgium looks to continue their run on Thursday against Argentina. Quick side note, USA goalkeeper Tim Howard made history during his tough loss by making 16 saves. That was recorded to be the most saves in a World Cup match since 1966. A quick Wimbledon update. Serena Williams was forced to pull out of doubles match with sister Venus Williams, due to what they are calling a viral illness.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if any of you ladies saw the video yesterday,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah,
it was really hard to watch her. She couldn't really do much. You know, she couldn't really serve, but it wasn't a pretty sight.
Yeah.
For the first 14 minutes of the match, medical staff had to assist her, making sure that she was well enough to compete. But, you know, it didn't last too long after they saw how difficult it was for her to even serve or catch balls from the ball kids and stuff. So hopefully she recovers from that. Now, let's talk NBA. First off, congratulations to Doug McDermott on getting drafted to the Chicago Bulls. This is great news for Bulls fans such as myself. Gives us a little more hope going into next season. And speaking of good news, Carmelo Anthony sat down with Bulls front office to discuss a possible contract. So for Bulls fans, fingers crossed on that one. Excuse me. And speaking of free agency, the Heat's Big Three have all decided to opt out of their contracts. but it looks like they won't be going too far. As of yesterday, both Bosch and Wade agreed to take pay cuts so that LeBron James can receive a max pay of roughly $20.7
million. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's probably eating very well off of that. But actually, good news for Cyclone fans. There's still light at the end of the tunnel for both DeAndre Kane and Melvin Ejim, who both, although they both went undrafted last week, Kane was picked up that next day by the Lakers to join their summer league team, while Ejim just signed this week with the 76ers onto their summer league roster. So good luck with that one. And for the Iowa Cubs, newcomer Manny Ramirez hit a two-run homer in his debut game as player and coach. I don't know if any of you know Manny Ramirez, but he had a rough end in the major leagues, and he's like the oldest player right now in the minor leagues. So this was kind of a good thing for him, and which gave the Cubs a 7-6 lead to win their game last night. Okay. And last night to top off a doubleheader with the White Sox, Rick Porcello threw a complete game shutout against the A's, while the Angels were able to hold off the White Sox in a doubleheader. So there's that. Well, that wraps up this week in sports. Back to you, ladies.
Well, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been one of your hosts today, Kay Potter, together with Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you, Viveka, for our weekly sports report. And it's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Before Viveka's report, we spoke about water safety with Ron Latson, Piper Walls from the Skunk River Paddlers, and Jill Burt from the Ames Aquatic Center. And earlier in the show, we spoke with Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Steve Wilson, Energy Services Coordinator for the City of Ames, describing EcoSmart, the energy-saving incentive program for the city to reduce our carbon footprint. You can find out about the program at the city website, cityofames.org. That's cityofames.org. We also here at KHOI would like to express our condolences to the Jenks family on the death of their son, Tim.
We hope to see you this weekend. KHOI will be in the middle of the Independence and Susquecentennial celebrations. Since we are downtown at 410 Douglas, please stop by our tent on Douglas Avenue in front of our station to say hello and buy an ice cream sandwich from us. It will taste good. It's organic ice cream, and it will be supporting community radio by buying it.
The music we played today on the show was a song called Waterfall by Ray Burkhart. And our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends and check us out on Facebook. You can also listen to the show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org.
KHOI is hosting a National Community Radio Conference this August 14th and through 17th. You are, of course, welcome to attend the conference. You'll meet a lot of great people. And you can also participate by volunteering if you're interested in doing that. We are going to tell you about it more soon here on Local Talk, but until then, you can read about it at grc2014.net. That's grc2014.net.
For now, we want to put out a request to you. If you have an extra room in your house and can give a conference goer a place to stay, please contact us at 292-2878 or email us at khoiradio@gmail.com. We really appreciate your offers, and it will go a long way to communicate our community's hospitality and goodwill. We're pretty sure you will get a wonderful and interesting guest out of the experience.
And remember, your participation as audience and support is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.